Hey, this is Ash, and welcome to the All Things Dentistry podcast, a place where we talk about just absolute nonsense that goes on with the practice of dentistry. Not to break down your confidence, but to hopefully make you feel better with the mistakes that I made. But anyways, I'm super grateful you're here. It's been a heck of a week. Let's make it a hell of a week. Really interesting. A couple cases I want to share with you. Yeah, actually, as I'm thinking about it, as I was getting ready for this, I was thinking, like, what cases can I talk about? Well, there's quite a few. One of which is, you know, I mean, there's a few things you don't know, but I do. There's a lot of things that went on this week, and one of them that's really kind of nuts is I billet a hockey player, and all my kids play hockey, and my oldest son played hockey with this young man, Kyle, who had to go away to where I live to play at a higher level. Well, it turns out I am not in my house a lot because I'm driving back and forth to be with my children. I've been moved away from, I've not really talked about that ever, probably never, but I live an hour and a half away from my children for the last 4 years. So it's been a very difficult time, but I drive back and forth probably every second day. I love my job. I love the place I live. It's a cottage country. It's beautiful, but my kids aren't there. So I have a beautiful house. It's just a regular house, to be honest. It's a nice area. And Kyle, we invited Kyle to come and live with me, but I'm never there. And he was 17 and never been away from home. So actually his dad came to stay with me too. So I have Stu. Stu has lived with me for the last, 6-7 months now. My house hen, retired guy, awesome guy. And I walk in the house. Stu's so funny. I walk in the house yesterday, and Stu's like, I'm like, hey man, how's it going? He's like, oh, I'm not doing so well. Like, Stu's a 57-year-old retired, great guy, retired banker of all things. So I've learned a little bit about bankers, and turns out he has a buccal space infection on his left mandible. I've got some gloves, and I actually have a can of cold spray. So I've cold tested his teeth on the lower left. This is quite interesting. And I don't have a lot of light, right? It's just on my couch. So I test his teeth on the lower left. I mean, this buccal space infection is fairly large. It's so large, it's actually putting pressure on the mental nerve, which is actually causing paresthesia to his mental nerve, which gives him ipsilateral. That was the word I was looking for when I did my YouTube short last night. Ipsilateral, I can't believe it just came to me. So lower left, ipsilateral lip numbness of all things from this space infection. So it's pretty big. It's really, really interesting because it's not painful. So I cold test his mandibular teeth, and I'm like, I don't know. What the hell? In my mind, I'm like, what the hell? They're all vital. That's not a space between your first premolar and your molar. That's a root remaining. Of course, so the crown had fractured off several years ago, and he has a root there. So that is the nidus. There's that word from dental school or residency, the nidus of infection. So, and now maybe 20 years ago, I'd be a little more, I'd be like, okay, let's get some stuff and take this out at home. But now 20 years, 25 years of doing this, I'm like, no, I'm good. And he probably wants the same. Just wait till we'll do that at a dental clinic. So it was late at night. So we prescribed him some antibiotics and just kind of let him kick in. So it's very interesting. I actually posted a YouTube short about it because you rarely see. Forget this last week's case. This case actually is so interesting. And I think it had to do with a very similar situation. And I'll never know. So about 10 years ago, a patient came in and needed an endo to an upper 7. So second molar, right side. I'll never forget it. Non-restored, but it looked like it was fractured. And so we did the endo, And the irony, so many little pieces that went together with this. He was leaving on a long trip. I needed to get it done, so we got it done. And just actually, as I was placing the cones, so we've done the root canal, we're midst of placing, fitting my cones to take a working length. And at that time, I was still doing cones without sealer, I think. So anyways, I placed the cones to length, and he jumps out of the chair. And I'm like, whoa, what's going on? And jumps, and then blood starts pouring out of, I'll never forget, I can see it right now, mesial buccal canal. And I'm like, oh my God, what the hell is going on here? Like, this is like a hypochlorite accident, but from like gut aperture points. So starts flying, blood starts flying out of here. And I'm like, okay, well, so try to rinse it out with saline, kind of. And then, so everything calms down. I'm able to get the bleeding under control. And it's not a full, like, sodium hypochlorite accident. Like, it's just probably a little bit that got pushed out during cone fit. So I'm like, this is crazy. And there was nothing, the procedure was going just normal. So finished the case, and I'm like, okay, sorry about that. I really apologize. And I keep, you know, so I text him the next day, and he says, I can't remember exactly. It's been a long time. He says, but to some effect, his eye is getting swollen, and like there's pressure, his eye is getting, there's pressure against his eye, and his lower right lip is numb. I'm like, what? How? Like, this case, I lost sleep for a week. I did not sleep for the week. So, and I've actually come across a couple more cases, and actually I've had pain with our newer dentist I work with, a very, not similar, but same thing, where the sinus is irritated. Essentially what's happened is that the sinus is irritated, it becomes inflamed, and then it puts a lot of pressure on the eye. I'm not going to give you the science. I was trying to think, like, am I going to say like the ocular apparatus? Like, I don't even know. So it puts pressure on the eyeball through the sinus, and it just feels like it's not being crushed, but it was just a lot of pressure on it. And of course, pressure in the sinus. So, and that would be normal. I'd be like, oh, okay, got it. We'll prescribe you. I did AAA, which is like Afrin, antibiotic, and steroid. I can't remember why it's called AAA. It was a steroid. So that would be okay, but what's up with the lip numbness? How the hell is this happening? Well, I emailed this. I didn't really know who to contact. So I actually emailed a few people and got in contact actually with a really nice guy. And you know, I mean, they just talked about a bunch of stuff, like a couple, like one of them, I don't even tell you who it is. So one of them was Kenneth Hargraves, who is the editor of the Journal of Endodontics. He came to talk to us at a residency, at my residency. So I'm like, well, that guy would have an idea. He had no idea, but because it's so random. And then I talked to, I can't remember the name. Anyways, big pain, endo pain guy. Has four kids like me, and we had a really nice conversation. Couldn't figure it out. And so slowly over time, the lip numbness subsided. And then, you know, he moves on with life, and that's that. So fast forward like 8 years, and I was just kind of surfing through the records. And I was like, what happened to that patient? So I look, and he had moved to somewhere in Europe. And I checked the records, like the electronic records. I'm like, oh, this is, and they come back into our system. I'm like, oh, this is really interesting. The lower, one of the premolars was extracted. What? I'm like, oh, that's crazy. Turns out, when I look at the pan, at that same time, there actually was a lesion of endodontic origin from one of the lower right premolars. And I have no way to confirm it. I never even talked to the patient. But I'm thinking it's very similar to the situation with Stu, where for some reason, so I don't know if the lower right. And remember, I prescribed him antibiotics. Oh my gosh, I just came to another conclusion, because as I was vocalizing, I'm like, how the hell did that, the lip numbness go away when, you know, I didn't address the necrotic tooth in the lower right? Well, I prescribed him antibiotics for the sinus. Hello, ding dong. So just realized that now. So as the antibiotics took effect on the sinus, I don't even know if there's a sinus infection, but on the lesion of endodontic origin, decreasing its pressure against the mental nerve, all this, the symptoms of this lower right lip paresthesia diminished. And he still has the root canal too, so that made me happy. But it was so bizarre. So I don't know if the pain was, I just had a discovery right in the middle of this conversation with myself in my car as I'm driving, talking to you, which I'm grateful you made it to 11 minutes of the podcast. But I, you know, I never, never in my wildest dreams would I ever think that that would happen. And really what goes through my mind, if it's not going through yours, it's going through mine. Was the mandibular tooth the reason? Did it refer pain to that upper tooth? Because what I learned from that day, and I had done it before, but what happens is, and you know, if you're a dentist and you're listening to this, you get really focused on one thing and you try to figure out why, but you lose sight of other things around. And a lot, I have an example to share with you just from this morning, where you're so focused on that upper second molar where you lose track of the rest of the mouth. And that might have actually been the preferred pain. I've never seen a premolar to a molar, but it could be possible. Preferred pain to that upper right, but regardless, because it was, although he was a grinder and a clencher, I remember that. Chances are, maybe he needed a root canal, maybe he didn't. But it was just so coincidental that those two incidences, the like pseudo sodium hypochlorite incident, along with the right lip numbness, happened together. So that's where I kind of learned through that situation. Well, not that situation, but oh, actually, afterwards I learned. After I kind of figured it out, I'm like, that is totally possible, having paresthesia from an infection. And sure as hell, yesterday walking to my house, Stu's got this submandibular, just kind of like a buccal space infection. So he's just on antibiotics right now, and then we're gonna get him seen by another dentist to get that taken care of. On another note, talking about what's, you know, really interesting, maybe not to you, but to me, and I'm just going to share with you for the hell of it because I'm sitting here talking, was that getting focused on a very small aspect, or especially an x-ray, you take a large panoramic radiograph of all the teeth, and you just focus on one thing, and it's really hard not to. And residency taught me not to do that. As I get older, you learn not to do that, but when you're brand new, that's all you do, because you're like, oh, that's the problem, I need to solve it. For example, one of our more experienced clinicians, great guy, came and talked to me today about an endo he was doing on a lower second molar, right side, C-shaped. He's not using a scope. You know, I'm kind of throwing that in there because any type of root canal is really tough without a microscope. I mean, I was doing an upper second molar this morning, and there's no way in hell I would have found the distal buccal orifice had I not had 6 times magnification. I mean, freaking impossible. And the 2-7 that I did before that, first thing in the morning, patient had come back, we had a pulpectomy done, and my patient canceled, so this patient was referred to me anyways to do it and to do his root canal. And clean and shaped everything, like actually the main provider did a great job, clean and shape everything, and then like, oh, I wonder if there's MB2 in here. And sure enough, I had to really dig and look for it. It was a very small sliver. I mean, it opened up to be a solid canal, but it was a small sliver of that started just along the mesiolingual line angle of the, I don't know if you can imagine this, but just the lingual side of the MB1 canal. I mean, it was so tiny. And it was just more of a kind of like a guess. I was like, you know, I'm going to give it a shot, see if there's something there. I'm just going to trough a little bit. And then boom, and it, you know, there's the canal. And I mean, what was interesting about that case is that, I know I'm jumping away from Stu, I'm sorry. What was interesting about, and the other situation, what was interesting about that case alone is that he had a complete pulpectomy. Everything was opened up, and yet he had spontaneous pain. The pulpectomy was just done 3 days ago. Spontaneous pain. Like 8 out of 10. Percussion sensitivity, obviously, you know, thermal sensitivity. Could not sleep last night. And I'm like, I don't understand why, like, there's no pulp in this tooth. Why are you, and it was better. And then, it, you know, he had no pain when he came in, large carious lesion into the pulp. Pulpectomy was initiated. And then slightly pain-free day after, 2 days, and all of a sudden, like 3 days later, boom, extreme pain. Like, why, what the hell's up with this? And I'm wondering if it was that MB2 of all things. I don't know. The original practitioner did fracture like a 15 file in the distobuccal root, which actually I could not get past. And I didn't even know it was there until I took my cone fit radiograph. And the provider had actually taken a post-calcium hydroxide, like a post-pulpectomy radiograph. And you can, once you look for it, you take a look, you're like, oh, okay, there's a file there. But without doing that, it just kind of looks like trabeculation. I don't think that that's a cause of that type of pain. I mean, I could be wrong. It was like the last apical 2 millimeters, so I'm not too concerned about the outcome. So it was so weird. Anyways, back to the gentleman sitting in my office with his C-shaped second molar. And I'm thinking like, I mean, these are tough. They're tough. I had one just 2 days ago, C-shaped, really difficult. Extremely difficult. And he folded, I think what happened was he folded his gutta-percha point as he placed in to fit the cone after. So I think he fits his cones without sealer, places, you know, dries everything, places the cone with sealer back in, and then seals it up, and then takes an x-ray, and then boom, it's like, oh, my cone doesn't go all the way to length. And I think it got snagged on something and got folded. So he's like, I'm done. I'm going to send it to Dr. Mark. And as I was, so he had a PA, of the final PA, and as I was looking at it, I'm like, hey, yeah. But now I've made so many mistakes, millions of them, that I noted it's habit to take a look. Okay, not all the time, but 99% of the time it's habit to look to the whole periapical radiograph. And sure as hell, on the first molar, there's a lesion from the, you know, it needs retreat. Or I haven't checked deeper in the record to see if there's already been a retreat, but there's a lesion of endodontic origin on the tooth number 4-6. And I said, yeah, no worries, just send the patient to me. And by the way, you know, there's a lesion on the 6, but he's either taken out or retreated. And the clinician's like, oh, I didn't even see that. And I just remembered many years ago making lots of mistakes in residency and saying almost the same words, like, oh, I didn't even see that. Actually, almost very similar. It was I'll just finish this off. The incident was presenting in front of the entire residency, staff and residents, our cases. And sure as hell, I was so proud about, I don't know what it was, whether my implant placement or the implant crown. I don't know, but it was an implant. Yeah, it was the implant and my implant and success, blah, blah, blah. We had to do like so many number of presentations. And then the endodontist in the room says, my mentor is like, so when are you going to tackle that first molar that needs that retreat? Look at the radiograph on the screen, blown up in front of everybody. And I just hung my head down in shame, because the whole time I have been staring at the treatment plan. So there was no digital at that time, so we were old school, making our drill guides with models and all this other baloney. I mean, it did work, but so no 3D imaging. It was all just straight 2D images of pano and maybe a periapical radiograph. Prepping for your implant, it was free-handed. So not that 3D would have helped me see the lesion, but I just never looked. I was just looking at that credentials site the whole time, like from pre-planning to implant placement all the way to post-implant healing and then crown on top. Like, it was just mind-boggling how many times I'd looked at that area and missed that periapical lesion. Anyways, holy heck, I made a lot of mistakes, but I'm very grateful for the job that I love to do, and I'm grateful that you've made it to the end of this. Quite hopefully it makes you feel a little more confident in your skills. Maybe it sheds some light on a couple things. I'm super grateful you're here, and we'll talk to you soon. Cheers.